This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Utopia Media's California Politics Today. We're about to speak to Bill Rosendahl, city council member in the city of Los Angeles from District 11. Welcome to California Politics Today.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me.
We want to talk about clean money. Tell us why there's a need for clean money in the election system in the city of Los Angeles.
Very simple. You have to take the special interest money out of the political process. It strangulates the public policy debate, and it also impacts dramatically how politicians react because they have access, and the money is necessary for the elected to get elected and to stay in office. So if you really want to be clean, you just get it out of the mess, and so that the people, both from a perception standpoint and from a real standpoint, don't get cynical and say, oh, they're all bought off.
Okay. Tell us what you've proposed and where it stands in the process of the legislature that is the Los Angeles City Council.
Sure. Yesterday, December the 12th, there was a meeting. Staff members from Wendy Grew, Eric Garcetti, and myself, with the CLA, the city attorney, with the clean money people, Susan Lerner, and with Bob Stern from the Center for Government and the Public Interest. I think there's something like that is his name.
Center for Governmental Studies.
There you go. And that group as a group met and did a lot of brainstorming yesterday.
Okay.
So that was the first step. Raised a lot of questions. I'm going to start crunching the numbers, looking at the research of places like Connecticut that just did it, of course, you know, Maine and Arizona have done it, that kind of stuff.
Okay, and has something already passed the city council to yes, authorize this study?
It was a unanimous motion to explore the clean money, see what can be done with clean money, and then if we can come to a final report from the city, pass it through the council, it will appear on the ballot for the voters to make the final decision.
Is there a timetable for the consideration and for the ballot placement?
It could be next November is where we see the clock potentially taking us there.
Okay. What were some of the dimensions of the discussion that you had yesterday?
Well, as I said, my staff did. It was talking about what would be the way you adopt what you see right now in Connecticut and Maine and in Arizona to the city of Los Angeles. We have lots of things to look at. First, we have to look at how much across the board numbers of people do you think makes it a representative viable candidacy. Two, how much money would the city overall have to spend on this clean money strategy. So the voters, you know, the tax dollars, it's public funds, what would that be like? Three, how do you deal with the notion of independent expenditures and First Amendment rights? And all of that were the initial discussion. Susan Lerner, who spent a lot of time on this issue, and Bob Stern, who spent a lifetime on this issue, obviously was very supportive of the concept and, you know, asked the questions. And a lot of homework is ahead for all of us. There'll be a series of public hearings in the community as well as down at City Hall with experts from all over the nation to help us wrestle with how we actually do have a clean money campaign. We're the second biggest city.
Is Los Angeles pretty much in the forefront on this now on a municipal level?
Yes, it is. Being the second largest city in the nation, it can truly have a ripple effect across the whole country. I mean, the day has to come, frankly, in my opinion, that on the federal, state, and local level, we have to take the special interest out of the political process. That's why we don't have health care for our people. We should have Medicare for all, but the insurance companies and the drug companies have pretty well destroyed that debate. In development issues in the city of Los Angeles, we have so much awareness by developers of the value of the dirt that we deal with. We're the land use people, the city council. It would be great if elected officials could be really responding to just where the people want to go rather than to level, you know, the lobbyists. In Sacramento, it's the same thing with all the issues that they deal with. So if we can set the example as the second largest city in the nation, it will impact the state and it will also impact other cities. And I dare say I'd love to see it in Washington as well.
Okay. Well, I'm going to talk about the implications in a minute, and I know that you haven't decided on the specifics yet. But say a little bit about the process in general by which a person who says to him or herself, I think I can do a good job as an elected official. I want to run. How would they go about qualifying themselves for participation in a Clean Money, Clean Elections program?
That's a good question, Mark. And what it will really mean is a formula that we'll have to develop that says X number of citizens give you each $5. That
okay.
shows a cross-section of people's support. Not the amount of money, but it's the cross-section and the numbers that add up to $5 apiece. We have to come up with a formula that's truly a respectable, viable formula so that then those viable potential candidates can all be on the same level playing.
Okay. Now, again, speaking in generalities, would people be eligible to accept additional money beyond what the city would give them? Or
no.
would the terms of the arrangement be that if they took the city's money, they couldn't take anybody else's money?
Yeah, that would be the terms. And I'm only speaking in general sense now
right.
because obviously we have to vet this. These are questions that we will discuss in the sunshine of our process. These are discussions we'll have before the community and the council, and eventually something will appear on the ballot that the public then will vote on. So it'd be really premature to give you the exact formula. But my gut tells me that the first thing, if you're going to opt in, you opt in. And therefore, whatever we come up with, those are the rules that you will you know, work within as a candidate for that office.
Okay. Now, I've talked to people at Bob Stern's organization about video voter, a program by which people are provided with television time to make their case to the voters. Would something like that figure into this in any way?
I will be very candid with you on this. I am a big believer that the airwaves are owned by the people, and that the people should have right to those airwaves around elections. I know that's radical. I know that the broadcasters are regulated by the federal government, and we don't have power over broadcast signals. I know we do have power over cable signals. And therefore, my first comment will be that on the cable side, it definitely should be part of the discussion of the renewals of the franchises and free airtime. I created a project, you know, and got a Beacon Award for it when I was a cable guy called Cable Free Airtime Project. And I got the whole industry behind it where candidates got free airtime on our statewide channel. And that project basically said the airwaves at a certain time before an election should be used by the public at no charge for elections. And I, you know, encouraged my industry at the time that I was in it. The industry blessed it. So I think there's a receptivity, at least in cable, to open up the airwaves around elections and allow free airtime, same equal time for each of the candidates and so on and so forth. Hopefully, federally someday, the special interest broadcasters will be forced to make it free airtime. Every major democracy on the planet opens up all their channels around elections that really connects people to the political process. And as you know, Mark, there are greater voter percentage turnouts in practically every other nation than the United States. And part of it is because the airwaves are opened up.
Okay.
Part of it is the radio waves are opened up. And I dare say the newspapers actually put in candidate statements, not like our papers do, but they should do that as well. I think all of those semi-public interest groups, television, radio, and newspapers, should all buy into clean money in a bigger way so the taxpayers don't have to pay for it all. There was a day in the days of the 80s before they changed the law at the FCC that broadcasters had to give back, and they did a lot of public affairs programming. Now they've just about gotten rid of it, and even their news is driven by ratings and by advertising dollars than it is substance. So we got a long way to go. I will tell you with the broadcasters, I'm more optimistic about the cable casters, and I think we have a long way to go with both the radio and the newspapers, but that's something that will be discussed and to see where we can take that, because less public dollars and more, you know, commitment from those that have public service that they should have as part of their responsibility, meaning the media, the better it will be.
Okay, two other things. One, something of a dig at broadcasters. There is very little. There was more public affairs programming on the cable programs that you ran at Adelphia than there are on all of the major network news programs here in Los Angeles now.
I know.
But they do run plenty of paid commercials for which they get a pretty penny, and that's the only thing that people who watch those channels can see about politics. Are you expecting that there'd be much coverage or support of these reforms by the very local news outlets on these corporate channels that stand to lose by this?
We have to really work them. When I was in the position that had created the Cable Free Airtime Project, and I have created a lot of election specials, as you know, I encouraged the League of Women Voters and other groups to get with the news directors of those channels. And one cycle of politics, 1 year of the cycle, I was able to focus a lot of the local stations due to the pressure from community groups to do more. But it's a matter of community pressure on them at this point, and I think maybe we can somewhat shame them into being more responsible.
Well, that assumes that they have some that they're subject to that.
Let me
you wrap up on this rather big question. It sounds like from what you're saying that if LA goes ahead, it'll set a good example for the state, federal level. A lot of change will happen. There's a lot at stake here. There's billions of dollars in government spending that's influenced now by lobbyists and paid commercials and the people who contribute money to the electeds to get them there. You're talking about a reform that has the potential to turn that on its head and put the people at the center of the political process instead of the money of lobbyists and big contributors. What kind of reaction do you expect from those groups and individuals and that system that will work to tell people that this isn't in their interest and that they'd suffer if this happens and that the way it is now is the best way to do it?
I think if we were talking about this in the federal government, you would see huge, powerful forces. On the city government, it's basically the land use people, the people in development issues, some special projects other than land use, but it's a much smaller population of special interest.
Right.
And I don't think their effectiveness would be as strong as if you were dealing with it at a federal level. But I don't take it lightly. I know we're switching. We're going to attempt to switch the paradigm. One of the reasons I ran for office, Mark, was to clean up the political process, and clean money was always something I believed in. And, you know, I'm committed and determined, and if we can, you know, articulate it properly to the electorate, and they buy into it, and they vote it in, it'll become the law of the land, and it'll be a wonderful thing. Will they fight us? Yes. Of course they'll fight us. You know, lobbyists get paid for banging on elected officials' doors and sharing with them positions that they would like the elected officials to take. They'll still bang on the doors of the elected officials, but their influence will be on the merits of an issue rather than on the dollars.
Okay, and there's one benefit that I've seen in the literature about this that seems to have come up is that candidates and incumbent electeds don't have to spend so much time raising money, and they can actually concentrate on their work. Say something about that.
Well, there's just no question about it that the candidates that I had most recently been, where $1 million was spent on both sides, so it's a couple of million dollars that election cost, I had to raise $600,000-$700,000. That you spend an inordinate amount of time begging for bucks rather than pressing the flesh. Fortunately for me, I've had some background in fundraising. I had raised millions, literally, for George McGovern, and I'm a salesman at heart. So I'm able to look people in the eye and ask for their support. Unfortunately, though, you're looking in the eyes of people that might not necessarily be the eyes you want to look into. So my preference, obviously, was to spend most of my time with the constituent base than with the special interest base. I spent time across section with people. I was fortunate having a television show that gave me awareness by a cross-section of people that were not your traditional special interest. I ended up with 1,300 contributors, and they were people who would give me $5 or $25 or $50 or $100. They were housewives. They were school teachers. They were working men and women. They were homeowners. people I got to know, people who got to know me. They weren't your typical lobbyists. In fact, the typical group supported my opponent, Central City Association, the Downtown Special Interest. They all supported my opponent because they saw me take a strong political stand on Playa Vista, where I drew a line in the sand and I said, no way should we go forward with this project presently constituted. So the development community thought I was anti-business. So they worked against me. But in spite of the special interest working against me, I did connect with the average, you know, people in the district and did obviously win by a large margin, 14%. But begging for bucks is no fun for anybody.
Okay, three fast questions, and then I'll let you go. You're ready to use this system yourself in your next election?
No question about it. I certainly wouldn't need to. As an incumbent, you got the base, but I believe in the system, and I believe in taking the money out of the political process, and I believe in getting the special interest from strangulating the political process. All that stuff's got to stop, and even though it's not to my personal advantage to put it in place, I'm enthused about it, and I hope the voters will be, and I hope it will be in place if I run for re-election in 4 years. I haven't decided yet.
Are you optimistic that the plan in some form is going to go through?
Yes, I'm optimistic. I'm optimistic that thanks to people like Susan Lerner and Bob Stern and our CLA's office and, you know, the city attorney's office and our own staffs and all the others, that we'll get the best and the brightest ideas from around the nation and from academia and from political science groups, you know, clean money people of various ilk, that will create a hybrid that will be like the hybrid vehicle. It'll work for us in the city of Los Angeles, and then everybody will have to graft their own kind of hybrid for their different states or cities. But it's exciting. It's really positive. I was thrilled that the council supported us on it. And I think we'll be very vigorous over these 90 days in putting something together that the council will vet, something that we'll bless, and that we'll end up putting on the ballot.
What can people who think this is a good idea do to get involved and support the idea?
Well, first, they should go to the meetings as the brainstorming continues, and there'll be public meetings. People should speak out about their definition of it, how they view it, how they see it working, what their suggestions may be, because I certainly don't have the answers right now in my brain. I just have it in my gut, which is we've got to take money out of the political process. It's done more to hurt America on every level than anything I know. It's a damn shame that we don't have health care for our people. It's a damn shame our infrastructures aren't built. Our schools aren't functioning. Yes, you know who functions, the criminal justice industrial system. That lobbying effort will build more prisons than we do schools. I mean, we're upside down as to where the people's interests are and the special interests.
And you believe that clean money, clean elections will result in substantive changes in priorities by government?
It has to be. That's the whole point of it. If it doesn't change the substantive ways in which government looks at issues, then what's the point of it? I mean, we are nowhere in our great nation right now on those major issues that I've mentioned to you, and we have to go there. I mean, that's why I, at 60 years old, got into the political process, because I can't take it anymore the way it presently is.
Okay. I want to thank you for talking to us, and I hope we can cover this in more detail going forward.
I'm sure you will, and thanks for your questions and for doing it.
You're welcome. Bye.